All right. Hi, everyone. I'll just get started and let people trickle in. Welcome to Power BI for the Enterprise. Let's actually jump straight in. So the goal of this talk is to kind of do a walkthrough of the high-level capabilities of Power BI. And along the way, I'm going to talk about some of the best practices for deploying Power BI for the enterprise. And this comes from both working with the product team as well as working with a bunch of customers in the field. We've picked up a bunch of best practices. First, a little bit about me. My name is Siri Sun. I'm a product manager with the Power BI team over in Redmond. I mostly work on the service, although obviously, I work with Power BI in general. Recently, we released the subscriptions feature, which I'll be talking about a little bit later. Anyway, I love Power BI. Before I get started, show of hands real quick. How many people here are currently using Power BI? Okay, awesome. Almost the whole room. How many of you have actually used Power BI for more than 3 months? Okay, how about 6 months? Very cool. Very cool. I asked that so I can kind of tailor the talk based on what people's levels of expertise are. So hopefully, everyone will find this productive. Even those of you who've used Power BI for a long time, the goal here is to have some best practices that'll help you learn something. So four high-level categories for this talk. We're going to talk about data sources. How do you get data into Power BI and the best practices there? Certainly around performance and making sure your data sources scale. We're going to talk about distribution. So once you have your content in Power BI, how do you share that out in a way that's secure, that's smart, that's safe? Talking about consumption. So on the flip side of the distribution coin, once you've shared the content out, how are people going to consume that content, right? How are they going to see it? What services we have, what functionality we support there? And then last, but certainly not least, we're going to talk about governance. So once you've set up Power BI for your enterprise, what tools do you have to administer Power BI, right, to make sure that people are signing in securely, to perhaps turn off certain features that you don't want to be used in your enterprise, et cetera, et cetera. Okay, so we're going to talk about each of those things, and we have a bunch of cool demos to show you. So let's jump in. One word before I truly start. I'm happy to answer as many questions as you guys want. Like, I will stay late. I will do whatever. But I just ask that you hold the questions until the very end, because we have a lot of content to get through, and I want to make sure that we get through it all. Okay? So, first, let's start with data sources, right? So how do you get your data into Power BI? At a high level, we kind of see our world as having cloud models and having external models, right? So when we talk about cloud models, this is the case where you have your data and metadata about the data in Power BI, in the cloud, right? So examples of this, right, when you go connect your data to Power BI desktop, you have that import option, and what you're doing there is saying, hey, Power BI, take this data, put it in the cloud, and build a model against that in the cloud, right? So examples of this are, you do that, you do Power BI desktop and use the import option. Any of the content packs, the service content packs that we have, like Google Analytics, Salesforce, et cetera, behind the scenes, it's also doing that. Conversely, we have what we call external models, right? And so in this case, what's happening is the data set metadata might be in Power BI, right? Information about the columns, et cetera. But the actual data itself is stored externally, right? It's stored in a SQL Server somewhere on-premises or in an instance of SSAS, SAP. There's a bunch of these data sources that we support. But fundamentally, the important thing to note here is that the data is not in Power BI itself, right? And this is whether to actually import the model into Power BI versus whether to connect to a model externally is one of the biggest decision points that you're going to have, and it's going to be very impactful. So you're going to want to be you're going to want to make this choice very consciously. And what we're going to talk about in the next few slides is actually how to make that choice, right? Here are just some examples. So you can, I think I already mentioned some of these, but you can use a live connection against an instance of analysis services that you have running somewhere. Or you can use direct query directly against source data that's not analysis services, like SAP HANA, SQL Server, things like that. Right? And both of these can exist either on-premises or Azure. So how do you actually make this decision, right? It's a very meaningful decision. What things should you go and consider? So the first thing you're going to want to consider is the model size and the complexity of the models. Okay? So it can range anything from simple, right, a few rows in Excel, all the way to extremely complex, right, terabytes or gigabytes of data. And here, really, the decision, one of the key numbers, the key decision points you're going to have is that when you import a model into Power BI, the limitation is that your model can only be 1 gigabyte. Right? Whereas if you connect externally to data, then you kind of have the control over how big that data is, and it's going to be determined by the instance of whatever data source you're connecting to, right? So that's one of our decision points. Next, you're going to want to think about data update frequency, right? How important is it for you to have this data be updated very frequently, right? So on one end of the spectrum, if you don't mind having your data updated maybe once a day or even less frequently than that, then import is going to actually meet those requirements for you, because when you import the data, you can schedule a refresh against the data, but you can only do so up to 8 times a day, right? On the other end of the spectrum, if you need absolutely the latest real-time data, then what you're going to want to do is use the external data connection that we talked about. So that's another factor for you. Another thing to consider here is the number of active concurrent users that you plan to have. And here the thing to keep in mind is that if you do have an imported model, if you put that into Power BI, we do in practice support a pretty large amount of concurrent users. We call it actually low to medium, but really in practice what we've seen is that you can have up to, I want to say 100 to 200 users against the same data set, against the same report, and we'll do just fine. However, if you plan to have a larger number than that, right, say like 1,000 concurrent users, then you might start hitting some of the limitations of the cloud import model, in which case what you want to do is connect to an external data source in Power BI, but to make sure also that external data source can handle the concurrency that you're planning to have, right? So it's not just connect to an external data source and you have one instance of SSAS sitting on some Wimpy computer somewhere, Wimpy machine somewhere. You're going to want to make sure that your external data source can actually handle the concurrency that you're planning to throw at it. And finally, the final thing to consider is query latency. So by query latency, what I really mean is how long does it take between when Power BI makes the query to fetch the latest data for the visual, and how long that the underlying data source takes to return with the data, right? Which is very important in terms of performance. Here, cloud models tend to perform very well, actually. So if you're okay with some of the limitations we talked about with cloud models, if you're okay with having a model under 1 gigabyte, if you're okay with data that's not being updated very frequently, well, the query latency you're going to see is actually going to be very good, almost always, right? Whereas that's for a number of reasons, right? Power BI's the front ends that you hit are going to actually be very close to the back end where the data is, because they're almost guaranteed to be geolocated. And Power BI itself is actually running an instance of analysis services, and that instance is going to be very fast on data with a size of less than a gigabyte. Conversely, though, right, if you decide to go create a connection to an external data source, this query latency may vary for you, right? Partially because that data source may be located very far away from where Power BI's servers actually are, and so there's a network latency there. And also, there's no guarantee that the data source will be very fast at processing the queries that Power BI is sending it, right? So all things to consider. So let's cook that all into kind of the highest level guidance possible. So here's our highest level guidance, right? First, consider if you can live with, I don't want to say live with, but consider the import models first, right? These are almost guaranteed to be very quick, very performant, but keep in mind the limitations we talked about, right? Less than 1 gigabyte of model size, low to medium concurrency needs, low to medium, and infrequent data updates. If that's not doing it for you, our next guidance is to consider a live connection against SSAS. Okay, here SSAS is going to support any real data model size that you want, assuming that you have a machine, you have the hardware to actually handle that. It's going to also allow you to scale your own concurrency needs as appropriate, and it's also going to provide more frequent data updates. In reality, what it means is you have more customization over how frequently the data updates, because you can tell SSAS how frequently to do the processing, but from a Power BI perspective, we also guarantee that when you make that live connection, whenever you hit the dashboard, whenever you hit reports, you'll see the latest data in SSAS, right? And finally, if neither of those two options work for you, then our guidance is go with direct query. But, and I should say, often the way this comes about is if you have near real-time requirements for your data. So I must see the absolute latest at the data source. But beware the caveats, right? In particular, what we see a lot is that folks set up direct query against a data source, but they don't sufficiently test that data source's performance when they've built a Power BI report. So as a best practice, right, hook up Power BI Desktop to the data source using direct query. If that report is performing slowly, it's not going to get any better in the service, right? So that performance is only going to get worse. So definitely make sure you do that. And some other caveats there, right? Not all DAX functions will work against direct query. Direct query isn't supported against all data sources, et cetera. So direct query, but be aware of the caveats. Okay. Next, we can talk about the gateway. How many of you, by the way, are familiar with what a gateway is? All right, about half the room. So the gateway is designed to solve this problem, right? You have the Power BI service in the cloud, and that's where users are going to go to consume content, and you want to keep that data fresh. What if you have on-premises data sources, right? SQL Server or something else living on-premises. How are you going to keep that data fresh in the cloud? And the answer to the question is the gateway. So the gateway is going to act as a bridge between Power BI, the service, and the on-premises data sources. It's actually a really, really incredible piece of technology that acts as this bridge. Scott Guthrie earlier today talked about kind of Microsoft's advantage in hybrid scenarios, and I think this is one really good example of that. There's, of course, two types of gateways. There's a personal gateway designed for kind of individual use by individual analysts just trying to get their feet wet with Power BI. And then there's the on-premises data gateway with a lot more central monitoring and control. You can, in the personal gateway, you can only do the import data set type, whereas with the on-premises data gateway, you can do both data import and direct query. And also, I think I already mentioned this, but it has a lot more control, a lot more governance. So in general, our guidance is to use the on-premises data gateway for anything real, anything production, and to save the personal gateway really just for kind of testing things out. Let's talk about some gateway best practices, and this is stuff that comes up over and over again with customers, so we're actually really excited to get these down in writing and to share them. First thing is keep in mind kind of the minimum requirements we say for the gateway machine. Being a gateway, you of course install the gateway onto a client machine on-premises. Being a gateway is actually a pretty intensive job, and in a lot of cases we see it being the bottleneck for performance in the Power BI service, right? If you have a pretty beefy report that's seeing a lot of concurrency, all of those queries are going to be channeled through the gateway, right? And that's a lot of queries that the machine has to handle, and if it can't handle them, your queue in the machine will build up, and you'll see slower performance as a result. So our minimum system requirements are an 8-core CPU. This is simplified a little bit, but an 8-core CPU and 16 gigabytes of memory, right? And also Windows Server, well, we recommend that you have Windows Server 2012 R2. Okay. Secondly, what you're going to want to do, especially in a production scenario where the gateway is supporting some mission-critical use cases, is to set up performance monitoring on your gateway. And there's a great link there, actually, that walks you through a really cool process for doing this. Gateway is essentially the gateway machine. You install it on a Windows machine, and you can use Windows Performance Monitor to see statistics about, you know, how much CPU usage is going on, how much memory is being used, what the network traffic is like. And actually, this guide walks you through not only the process of seeing those metrics, but also the process of putting that into Power BI, which is kind of meta. But you can see that you can, you know, out of this process, you get graphs like this where you can very easily see, hey, when is my CPU spiking? When is my memory spiking, right? So once you have this performance monitoring set up, it's great because you can see what the baseline is over a typical day, and then you can use that baseline to see, to do anomaly tracking and see, hey, what are the time periods when things might be going too slowly for my company. So once you set up performance scaling as well, we highly recommend that if you do see these spikes in CPU, these spikes in memory, that's highly indicative of the gateway actually being a bottleneck for you, and in turn having slower performance up on the service. And so the guidance here is to scale up and scale out as needed. And what that means is either scaling up, as in having that machine adding more memory to the machine, maybe putting in a beefier CPU, or scaling out in the sense of having multiple gateway machines and splitting out different data sources, different data sets on the different gateways. So up until, well, currently it's still not possible to have a single data source be supported by more than one gateway, but you can at least, if you have multiple data sources on a single gateway, split out the data sources onto different gateways, right? And finally, this is something that, this is a little bit of a gotcha that happens not on day one, but maybe on day 100. We highly recommend that you add a security group to the list of gateway admins. And the reason for this is just being, people leave the company, people churn, they move to a different team, and you don't want the case where there's just one member who is the gateway admin, who has controls to who can set up data sources on the gateway, et cetera, and you don't want that person to leave and kind of make that gateway an orphan. Right, we're trying to solve this problem as well from the product perspective, and for example, being able to take control of a gateway. But for now, what you're going to want to do is definitely make sure you have a security group in the list of admins, so that if that nightmare scenario happens where all the former admins leave, you can still control who is in the security group, and then you can anoint a new admin to take control of the gateway. If this content actually was interesting, I would recommend that you attend the following talk, slight plug, because I'm also going to be giving that one, where I actually go into a lot more detail on the previous, basically all the content up until now. This is something that, we see a lot of companies have problems with, a lot of folks have problems with, not initially as they're just playing with Power BI, but really as they start to deploy mission-ready solutions for their enterprises. And so I think very important, would recommend you guys all check out this talk, shameless plug. All right, so with that, let's talk about collaboration. And so this section is about how do you collaborate in terms of creating a report, in creating dashboards, creating content. So I want to introduce the concept here of workspaces, right? Workspaces in Power BI are the top level containers of all content. So everything in Power BI belongs to a workspace. There are two types of workspaces that you can think about. There's the My Workspace, which everyone gets assigned. So anytime you sign into Power BI, anytime you sign up for Power BI, that user gets a My Workspace. And that space is meant for mostly just scratch scenarios. You can't share anything in that workspace. It's just something that you yourself can see. There's also then group workspaces, which are created after users sign in. They go and create a group workspace. And this is the area designed for sharing, co-authoring, and collaboration. So our guidance here is that when in doubt, and I can't emphasize this enough, when in doubt, start with a group workspace, right? And the reason for this is you can always have a group workspace with just one user, right? And so in the degenerate case, that group workspace is just a My Workspace. But if you want to later on, you can always invite more people into that workspace to co-author, to help, if you have a dashboard and you want to add some visuals, you can invite someone into that workspace to help you with that. One thing that kind of exacerbates this problem a little bit right now is that it's difficult to move content between workspaces, which is something we're also working on. But what you don't want to have is a situation where you have a really nice report, really nice set of dashboards in My Workspace. You want someone to co-author on that, but now you're kind of stuck, right? So that's a big piece of guidance for you. The second bullet point there, is that we highly recommend you use OneDrive for Business as the storage place for your PBI desktop files. So this is a feature that we've had for a very long time now, and we're constantly, we highly recommend that people do this, which is when you have your PBI desktop file, you go ahead and you put your PBI desktop contents into OneDrive and then connect Power BI to those PBI files in OneDrive. And this comes with a number of advantages, actually. One of them is versioning. So OneDrive will automatically keep different versions of the file as they change. So if you'd like, you can actually jump back to previous versions. Another big advantage there is actually Power BI will, on a regular cadence, actually be talking to OneDrive and getting the latest copy of the Power BI desktop file. So you can actually make changes on it and then hit refresh in the Power BI service. So for example, you in Power BI desktop, work on a PBIX file in OneDrive for Business, you add a few new tabs, you add a few new visuals, you can go into the service directly without doing anything else, hit refresh, and the service will actually pick up those new changes. So it's a great way to just, in general, do change management for PBIX files. So we highly recommend that. We've also, application lifecycle management is another big thing that we're working on, which is making sure you can have these different, this good process for, say, taking things from pre-production and moving them into production. And OneDrive for Business having multiple workspaces is currently our guidance here. So you have a workspace pre-production and Workspace for production. And then you have, they both connected to OneDrive for Business, and you're moving PBX files from the OneDrive for Business connected to one of the workspaces to the OneDrive for Business connected to the other workspace. We're obviously planning on improving that process as well, but it's kind of our stopgap guidance for application lifecycle management. So two other good resources here for that. There's the PBI using workspaces recap blog post that our good colleague Casper wrote. That kind of goes through the first bullet point. And then there's a governance and deployment white paper, which kind of talks about all the different concepts that we mentioned here. Okay. So now we can talk about distribution. So once you have your content, right, how do you distribute it? What are the best practices for sharing that content out and making sure the right people see it at the right time, right? So a quick recap here. You have dashboards in Power BI. These are, we kind of position them as the one pane of glass for your organization. This is the one place you go to see all the important metrics that are relevant to you. And then you have reports where you go and you drill into the details, right? And currently, in terms of direct sharing, what you're going to do is you're going to share these dashboards. And when you share the dashboards, then the reports kind of follow along with them, right? When you talk about sharing in PowerBI.com, we like to think of there being a spectrum, actually. So the spectrum goes from self-service, kind of ad hoc scenarios, all the way to managed scenarios, where you have, say, a BI team creating really polished content and trying to distribute that content in kind of a systematic way. So over on the far left, when we talk about self-service, this is the ad hoc sharing option. So this is the option where you go to a dashboard, you click the share button, and you're going to be able to select the list of users that you want to share this with. And in turn, that dashboard and the associated reports will show up in their My Workspace, in the recipient's My Workspace, right? So this is going to be a super low friction way to share. You can share it to individual users, and you can share it to security groups. You know, very similar to the way you can share with, say Office or Google Docs. But we recommend that this form of sharing happened only for kind of ad hoc sharing scenario. So, hey, check this out. I built this dashboard. I'm going to share it to two or three different people. And kind of that's the scope of this particular scenario. If you want to go more managed, then on the other side of the spectrum, you have organizational content packs. So with organizational content packs, you can actually gain a number of really interesting, really cool features that are going to help you out throughout your sharing lifecycle. Right, so the first thing that you're going to be able to do with content packs is to share multiple assets. So you can bundle two or three different dashboards, a bunch of reports, a bunch of data sets into a single unit and share that instead of having to individually share, you know, two or three different dashboards. Right, customers have found that to be very helpful when you're sharing these large kind of pre-made solutions. They also allow end-user customization. So the one thing that I didn't mention when we talked about sharing on the left over there is that in the ad hoc sharing case, users cannot actually modify the content that they get. So you can only view it. In the content pack scenario, though, what the users can do is they can go and get that content pack, right? In which case, they'll have access to all of the dashboards, all of the reports, all of the data sets that are contained therein. And then they can actually copy those dashboards and reports to make their own copy. And this is going to allow them to, is going to allow the recipients to you know, fill it around with it. Maybe there's a visual that they wanted to add or a visual they wanted to modify. They can do that. So this is another example of how content packs are a more kind of heavy-duty managed sharing solution. And finally, the last benefit you get here is that when you share ad hoc on the left, as you make changes to that dashboard, so say I share something with you, I want to make changes to the dashboard, you're going to actually see those changes light up in real time as I make the changes. And that might not be something that I want to have happen, right? Within Microsoft, we have we have folks that manage our executive dashboards, right, that Scott Guthrie and that Satya sees. And they always, back when we were using ad hoc sharing, they would always have to wait until like 2 or 3 a.m., in order to actually make those changes, because they didn't want to get a frantic email being like, well, why are my executive dashboards moving around all the time, right? With content packs, you're going to be able to avoid that problem. And the way you do this is when you publish a content pack, the version that you published won't actually change until you tell it to change. So you can publish a version, a kind of a publicly facing version, and then you can, behind the scenes, make a bunch of edits to the dashboards, the reports, the data sets, and only and the publicly facing version won't change until you tell it to change. And so that kind of solves this problem where you're able to work behind the scenes and while at the same time controlling exactly what end users see. So a bunch of great advantages there. There's embedding and linking as well. So this is not, by the way, this is not Power BI Embedded, which is our Azure offering. There's going to be a separate session about that later on. And so we're kind of scoping it out here. By embedding here, what I'm talking about is what sometimes we refer to as SaaS embed. So this is going to let you do is publish a dashboard or report into the service, and then embed a web view of that particular dashboard and report in the service into an app of your own. So maybe you're building a web app or you're building a universal app, and you want to have this little viewport, which is a view into a PowerBI.com dashboard or report, and this is going to allow you to do that. The nice thing, well, this is kind of a double-edged sword, but the second bullet point mentions the fact that users viewing this dashboard or this report that's embedded in the other experience will still need to sign in with their Power BI credentials, right? So this is the downside of this, of course, is that the user has to be, they have to have a AAD account. They have to know the credentials that they use to sign in. The upside here is that the same once they are signed in, we apply the same user security and authorization that the user would see in the Power BI service. So in that sense, you have less to worry about in terms of are people seeing the right things, right? You do access control once in the service, and then you're able to, those benefits accrue to the embedded experience as well. If you're not worried about security, if the data set in particular, you're not worried about that security, we also have the publish to web scenario, in which case you essentially generate a link, and everyone who has that link is able to view the underlying data. Of course, be very aware of that last sentence. Anyone can actually, this is a publicly facing link. There is really no security on this. But it is a true form of public embedding. What we've seen, for example, is, say governments, a town wants to publish some statistics about their travel and they want to make it publicly available on their web portal. This is the right tool for the job, for that particular set of jobs. Okay. So now we're going to actually take a little bit of a detour and talk about navigation in Power BI, navigation in the service. So the reason I talk about this is that there's actually a new navigation experience that's coming to the Power BI service. And this new experience actually comes from feedback that we've gotten about the existing navigation experience. I'm about to give a demo, so you'll see some of this in person. But the feedback that we got was in the current Power BI service experience, you have a left navigation bar, which can sometimes get very, very cluttered, especially in organizations that have actually deployed Power BI widely. For example, shared content will just get slotted into the list of content in the left nav. And so if you have a lot of things shared with you, it can be very hard to find the content you want to find, while at the same time, you're just kind of buried in all the clutter. So the preview of this is available now. So this is publicly available. So you can take a look. We highly suggest that if you guys have any feedback, please let us know. I also want to stress that at some point down the road, we will flip this over to be the default experience for all users. Now is the time to kind of start familiarizing yourself with this and also to give us the feedback because, as the last bullet point mentions, we are constantly making enhancements to this new navigation model. In fact, the version that you see in preview is almost always out of date because we have a bunch of other improvements kind of making their way through our pipeline. So I'm going to swap over to my other machine, and I'm going to do a quick demo of the new navigation model. Actually, show of hands, has anyone here actually seen the new navigation model? One person. All right, so this will be fun. Okay, so here I have the current navigation model. So what you'll see is there's a left pane there, And all of my dashboards and reports and data sets are in a single list. Don't read too much into the actual contents. This is like one of our test tenants, which explains kind of the wonky looking dashboard titles. But a big drawback of this, as I mentioned earlier, is that if you have content shared with you, it'll just show up in your My Workspace next to all the content that probably matters more to you. Well, depends on how important the shared stuff is. But certainly in Microsoft, what we see is as Power BI has grown in usage, people tend to share a lot of things. Those things tend to land in the left nav, and they start to clutter up the entire experience. And so that was kind of the class of problems that we wanted to solve with the new navigation model. And so what you can do in Power BI is go into Settings, and then hit Preview Features and turn on the Preview Features. And you'll see instantly that the left nav that we saw before is actually replaced with this new one. And so there's three new panes that I want to call out, I want to pay attention to. The first one is the Recent tab. So this is a list of the content that I most recently accessed, dashboards, reports, and workbooks. It turns out the stuff that you recently accessed is an amazing heuristic for the stuff that you'll want to access in the future. Surprise, surprise. And that's exactly what this pane gets you. And just based on initial user testing, based on our initial telemetry, we find that this, we almost guarantee that this pane will be where you get to like 80% of the stuff that you want to get to. There's also the Shared With Me tab now. So this tab is going to be a collection of all the content that's shared with you. And you'll see it's actually pivoted by the user who owns that content. And what this does is, well, A, it makes it very easy to get back to content that you know was shared with you. You can also see you can search through that content list in the same way that you could search through the recent list. But B, it also takes the load off of the actual workspace navigation, right? So now you no longer have stuff that's shared with you, intermingling with stuff that you might have been actually actively working on. And so really, that there's a nice separation created between those two experiences. And then finally, what you can do is click into My Workspace, and there you'll see a list of the dashboards, reports, and workbooks, and data sets that live in the workspace. And now it's actually truly the content that lives within the workspace. It's the content that either I've stood up myself, or in the case of a shared workspace, the other editors in the workspace might have stood up. And so there's that very nice separation there. So this is the new nav model. Please check it out. Give us feedback on the forums, on user voice, things like that. We're constantly making updates here, but we're really excited to be rolling this out. So now I'll flip back. Now we can talk about consumption. So once you've shared content, this is the flip side of the coin. How can you consume it? All right, here's just kind of a wall of the different options that we support. It's actually, I don't think, even comprehensive. But we have things like the Power BI portal itself. So you go to powerbi.com, and you can view the reports and dashboards that were shared with you. We have, of course, our mobile apps. If you've embedded a view into a different app, you can, of course, go to that app, and you'll see the dashboards and reports that were embedded. We have ad hoc analysis with Analyze in Excel. So once you have a model in Power BI, you can actually open up that model in Excel and use, for example, a pivot table to go analyze that model, if that's kind of the language that you're more familiar with. We have data alerts. So what this is going to let you do is set up an alert on a dashboard in Power BI, and when that, when a value goes over or goes under a certain threshold that you think is important, then Power BI will actually inform you about that. We also support, on the right here, two new ways, fairly new ways, to get your data out in the form of pictures. So one thing you can do right now is you can export static views of your reports to PowerPoint or print them. Or you can have Power BI automatically do this with our new email subscriptions feature. So anytime the data updates, we'll send you an email. Going forward, we'll kind of hit some of the interesting ones. Data alerts, as I mentioned before, here's the actual pane. You can click on a tile. The tiles types that we support for data alerts right now are KPIs, CAR tiles, and gauges. And you can configure a alert to be sent out whenever a certain value goes above or below or equals a threshold that you care about. One interesting thing about data alerts that we recently supported, that we recently enabled, is integration with Microsoft Flow. How many of you know what Microsoft Flow is, by the way? Okay, so a good half of the room. I'm going to demo this in just a bit, so that's all I'll say for now, but this is really, really exciting stuff and a really interesting way to actually connect your data in Power BI to a bunch of other services. That's all I'll say for now. As I mentioned before, you can analyze in Excel, which allows you to connect to a data set in Power BI using Excel, and here what I'm picturing is being able to use a pivot chart against it. There's also our mobile apps, of course, so any reports and dashboards that you set up in the Power BI service, you can also connect to them using our iOS apps, iOS, Android, or Windows 10 app. One really cool thing, by the way, is that our Windows 10 app is a universal app, which means that you can run it on Windows Phone, but you can also run it on desktop and Surface Hub devices. And if, one thing I would highly recommend if you ever get the chance to see it is actually our universal app running on a Surface Hub, which is one of those really big, like 50 or 60 inch touchscreen Windows devices. It's a really gorgeous dashboard viewing experience. And we actually light up some interesting custom features for that Surface in particular. For example, you can take a pen and start inking on things and then save that ink and share it out and things like that. So it's a really great experience and we're really excited to have it. Email subscriptions, which will also be demoing just a second. As I mentioned, what this allows you to do is set up a subscription on a report, and whenever that report changes, but no more often than every once every 24 hours, you'll get an email snapshot of that report page delivered straight to your mailbox, which is super exciting, something that a lot of folks have wanted. This is currently in public preview, so right now what you're able to do is subscribe yourself to a report page. But on our backlog, we have a number of exciting enhancements that we want to do, that we want to iron out. For example, being able to subscribe to an entire report and get all of those pages in a PDF, or being able to subscribe to a dashboard, or being able to subscribe other users. So those are all absolutely on our roadmap, something that we get asked a lot, and something that we hope to iron out in certainly throughout the rest of the calendar year for 2017. Okay, so now I'm going to demo two things. As I flip back here, so the first thing I'm going to demo is our data alerts integration with Microsoft Flow. So what I've already done here is set up an alert, actually two alerts. There's one for error count and one for list price. Pretend they're interesting metrics that we really care about. And in particular, I'm gonna try to set up gonna test our Flow integration with that first alert there, the alert for error count. Okay. So what Flow is gonna allow me to do, actually, let me flip to Flow and give some quick context here. So Flow is a fairly new Microsoft service which allows for workflow automation by connecting to a bunch of different SaaS providers. And if that doesn't make sense, I think it's going to make a lot more sense as I kind of start to set up this flow. So what I can do is I can have Power BI data alerts trigger a flow. And then based on the data from the alert, I can do any number of actions based on the services that are integrated with Microsoft Flow. Right? So in this case, what I can do is I can search for Power BI and select the Power BI trigger here. So this is our Power BI trigger. This trigger basically causes a flow to be set off whenever a Power BI alert is triggered. And so here you'll see that it automatically populates with the two alerts that I've already set up in the service. So I can select this error count one here. And then I can hit new step and add an action. And so now we can take the information that's in the data alert and plumb it to any of the services that Microsoft Flow supports, of which I think right now there are hundreds, and that list is constantly growing. And so just for this example, what I'm going to do is I'm going to actually use the alert to send an email. So the alert already sends an email, by the way. But right now, the email only comes to you. So one really interesting use case that we've seen people do is just to have a flow to send this email to a larger audience. Right? When error count is over a certain threshold, you want to send a heads-up email to your entire team or your support staff, et cetera. All right. So you can do that by, so I'll click here. So this is the Outlook action to send an email. Okay. And here I'm able to specify an audience. So I can just do whatever, Power BI team. And when I click into any of the fields, what you'll notice is that there's actually a dynamic content pane that comes on the right. So what this is doing is it's surfacing the information that the data alert provides and enabling you to actually use that in the rest of the flow, right? So for example, for the subject, I can just say, alert fired colon alert title. And I can say, value is tell value, right? And give it a name. Hit create. Takes a while. And actually, there we go. So it's done. And so now the flow is active. It's working. So it's really, really quick, actually. What's going on there? Flow run failed. Oh, I guess now it actually immediately starts looking for data alerts. And the data alert was not triggered yet, so you see it failing. But I set this up right before the demo, actually. And this is an example of what the email looks like. Here, it's up in the top left. Might be hard to see, but I sent it to the Power BI team. And here it's showing in the body things like tau value, alert threshold, and even a link to the actual dashboard, which triggered the alert, which is super cool. This email body right now might not be the prettiest email, but you certainly Flow allows you to customize what that email looks like to your heart's content. And you don't have to stop at email either, right? We've seen people connect this to GitHub, for example, to create new issues. Connect to Slack, Microsoft Teams, post this to a group, just all sorts of things. So really exciting stuff. Also, if you're at Scott Guthrie's keynote speech, the other thing you'll notice is that there's another flow action that Power BI supports, which is basically given any arbitrary flow, you can use the information from that flow and push it into a Power BI dataset, which is going to allow you to really take any of the connectors that Flow supports and start creating dashboards and reports against it, which is super cool. So the next thing I'm going to demo is our new subscriptions feature. So it's something that just went into public preview, I think, less than a month ago. Here I'm just on a normal report. And what we've done is we've lit up a new option there, which is the subscribe option. And so I can just hit subscribe here, select the report page, select how often I want this email, save and close. And there we go. It's actually super quick. You've now set up a subscription. And the next time the data refreshes, which I can trigger just by pressing the refresh now option, I will get an email in my inbox. That takes just a tad too long for the demo. So I did that also before. And this is the email that I got. So you'll notice it looks very similar to what you saw in the report. And if you want to learn more, you can click on the link here that says go to the report, and you'll be taken to the actual site. All right, so the last section is around governance. The first thing I'm going to talk about is data security. So how is Power BI securing your data? On the left there, we talk about three different things. So user authentication, as in you need to prove you are who you say you are to Power BI whenever you go and try to access resources. We also, of course, encrypt your data as it's being transported via SSL and TLS. We also encrypt your data at rest. So Power BI, of course, has some back-end databases where you keep track of user metadata, things like what your favorites are, et cetera. All of that data is encrypted as well, surely. On the right, we can talk about how you configure and restrict access, right? So as a owner of data sets and reports and dashboards, you can choose who is authorized to view it via sharing and content packs. You can also set up row-level security against data sets. And reports, which means even if you have access, you can give access to a set of people, but you can limit what rows of data individuals within, individuals can see, even after they've gained permission to the underlying report. And there's a number of policy controls as well, which is going to give you more fine-grained control over how users can access your Power BI content. I'm going to go through a few quick demos of those as well. So that's all I'll say for now. When we talk about user authentication, we can walk through quickly kind of the flow of what happens, right? So three players in general. There's going to be the client. There's going to be the web browser or the mobile clients. there's a Power BI service on the right, and at the top of the triangle is Azure Active Directory, right, which is the Microsoft Identity Provider Service. This is the thing that's going to be responsible for doing authentication for Power BI. So the client is going to go talk to Power BI. It's going to say, hey, I want access to this dashboard, but at the time it's not authenticated, so Power BI is going to say, hey, sorry, you're going to have to go authenticate. And so it's going to go to Azure Active Directory, and it's going to show that sign-in. You guys have probably seen that sign-in. It's the, well, I think that image might have changed, but it's the typical AAD sign-in screen, right? The user is going to go ahead in the client and actually enter their username and password, maybe do multi-factor auth, et cetera. And assuming that's successful, Azure Active Directory is actually going to hand the client a AAD token, a bearer token, right? And so now the client can kind of back up and talk to Power BI again, this time with the token, which says basically, hey, I am who I say I claim to be, and Azure Active Directory proves it, essentially. And that's going to give you, and in turn, Power BI is going to show the dashboard report or whatever that you were looking for, right? And so there's a number of advantages to relying on AAD, right? And these are, you know, these are advantages of AAD itself that Power BI happens to benefit from just by virtue of using AAD as the identity provider. So the first one is going to be support for both managed and unmanaged directories. In other words, if you want to manage your own directory, AAD will happily do that for you, right? You can set up a whole list of users there. Or if you have a list of users already in Active Directory on premises, you can easily sync that list of users to AAD so that AAD knows about the set of users, but ultimately AAD is not the entity that's managing the set of users. You can also do managed and federated auth. In other words, AAD will happily show that sign-in screen, and it'll do the job of storing user credentials, showing multi-factor auth, right, giving you the phone calls, things like that. Or it'll happily delegate that to something else. So if you have, for example, ADFS set up, if you have Ping Identity or any of the other major identity providers, you can say, hey, AAD, just give that responsibility over to something, to another identity provider that I specify. So it's flexible in that way. AAD, as I mentioned, supports multi-factor auth. It also supports a feature set called conditional access. So this is going to allow you to easily configure the conditions under which users are allowed to access particular resources. And I'm going to demo that in just a second. And finally, you're going to have single sign-on. And so, if you go ahead and sign into Office 365 somewhere else, like Word Online or SharePoint, et cetera, you're going to be able to single sign-on using those credentials against Power BI. So if you go to Power BI after that initial sign-on, you're not going to have to sign in again. Okay. So once you've proved you are who you say you are, right, once you've authenticated, there's also the step of authorization, which is, okay, now I know who you are, but do you actually have access to the underlying data? Right, so authorization, we kind of think about having three stages. So first is a user comes into Power BI, they want to hit a dashboard or report. Power BI is going to say, hey, first of all, do you have access to that report? Were you granted access to the report or the dashboard by the report owner? Or I guess, are you the report owner? Now, assuming you do have access, Power BI is actually going to reach out to the data sources. So this is, of course, assuming that you use an external data source. And there's two ways it's going to do this. If you're talking to analysis services, Power BI is actually going to hand over the credentials of the user that signed in. So when making that live connection, it's actually going to hand over and say, hey, I'm going to make a bunch of queries, but I'm going to attach the user who's currently signed in. And as a result, analysis services will respect those credentials and only hand back the data that the user is allowed to see. For example, if row-level security were set up in analysis services, right? Now, conversely, if this is any other data source, what's going to happen is the data set owner is going to configure credentials in the service, and those credentials are always going to be used in talking to that data source, regardless of what user is going to be actually hitting the service in step one. And finally, once we have the data back in Power BI, and this is kind of assuming we go with 2A here, where we're going with service level creds, you can still in Power BI set up row level security. And so you can still in Power BI say, hey, this set of users, they can see the report, but they can only see this set of rows, another set of users, another set of rows. And that filtering is going to happen in the service once we've gotten the data from the data source. And by the way, that filtering is also possible if you have a cloud model. So if you have a cloud model, you can only do one in three there. All right. We can also talk about policy controls. So there's a number of things that admins are going to be able to do in Power BI to really carefully restrict and control and monitor how users are using Power BI in their tenant, Right. So if you want to have precise control over who uses Power BI, right, you can use the Office 365 portal to assign licenses. In particular, what you can say is, so today, because there's Power BI free SKU, any user can actually go in, even if they're not given a license by the admin, any user can go in and they can start using Power BI, unless the admin actually flips that bit off. So you can actually prevent users from automatically getting that free license. And in that case, as the admin, what you've done is you've effectively restricted certain members of your organization from using Power BI. We also have really powerful auditing tools in Power BI, hooked into Office 365 admin auditing. And so this is going to let you have really fine-grained details about how users are using Power BI in your tenant. I'm going to demo that as well, so that's all I'll say for now. AAD conditional access, again, this is going to prevent you're going to be able to, for example, prevent access off the corporate network, prevent access on devices that aren't, that aren't compliant with certain policies that you set, etc. You can also, in the Power BI admin portal, control all up usage of certain Power BI features. For example, that export to web functionality that I saw before that lets kind of anyone with a link see a report or a dashboard, you can just turn that off wholesale for your tenant if you want to control that kind of thing. And finally, with Intune and with modern application management, you're going to be able to control the usage of mobile features. So, for example, you're going to be able to say, hey, people can use the Power BI mobile apps, but those apps must have, you know, six-digit PINs or something, because I don't trust four-digit PINs, things like that. You can be able to use Intune Man. So there's a whole suite of functionalities that you have at your disposal as an admin for controlling how users access Power BI. So with that, I'm going to flip over to the demo and actually show off some of these features. And two themes here. One is how quickly I can do them. We want to make these features are kind of designed to be kind of easier to use, but also actually extremely powerful. So here I've started in the Power BI admin portal. This is a new option in settings that gets enabled if you have admin privileges. Here, right? And so the first thing you'll see is we do present admins with an all-up view of the usage metrics for your tenant. And so here you'll see things like the total number of dashboards that users have made, total number of reports, total number of data sets, which dashboards are most used. Over there is a list of the top users in terms of, what is that, most data sets, I think it is? Yeah, or no, most dashboards. And here it's very obvious when you look at the usernames, if this is a test tenant. So there's a lot of great information here about aggregate statistics around how your tenant is being used. If you want more in-depth knowledge, you can flip over to the admin audit logs. And so I'll flip over here and actually show you that experience. So this is the Office 365 audit log search experience. And so here, what you can do is you can select any number of these Power BI activities. For example, dashboard views, dashboard edits, prints, views of reports, etc. And you can search against those over a time period of your choosing. You can even restrict it to certain users, or further restrict by a particular file or folder. And actually, here is I've already made the query before, so we can just see what that looks like. So in this particular case, this user, I think, did a dashboard sharing activity. Oh, wait, actually, I clicked on the user. Okay, here's the actual activity. So you'll see here that they shared a dashboard. The dashboard name was Kosoko, I guess. And you have a bunch of additional information, like when that dashboard was created, the IP address of the user, some additional metadata about the sharing action, etc. And so, as you can see, it's actually a very powerful, very fine-grained detail about how your tenant is being used. You can export these results, right? So one thing that we see people do sometimes is, hey, the admin, the auditing logs is not something that I have access to as a BI professional in my organization. My IT organization doesn't want to give me those access privileges. But what we've seen people do is just ask their IT admins to do an export of all of these results and actually give them just a dump of that. And that way, the IT admin can make sure that they're only giving the Power BI audit logs right to the folks that need them. And also that those folks aren't accessing other audit logs, which may not be appropriate. You can also connect to this via PowerShell. You know, you might find it difficult to keep up with the huge fire hose of data that you're going to get in here, but you can write a PowerShell script to, you know, kind of customize how you ask these queries and to really tightly monitor your organization for the activities that matter to you. Right. Next, we can talk about the one of our newest releases, one of our newest release features, which is the, whoops, I guess my cred's expired. Which is the Power BI service admin role. So a lot of feedback that we got when we first rolled this out was, hey, you know, I am a BI professional. I am kind of in charge of Power BI and its success in my organization, but my IT organization won't give me Office 365 global administrator rights, right? Like, they don't want to give me the privileges of deleting users and things like that. So our response to that ask was the Power BI admin role. So now, so I am a global user, my current account is. And I'm able to create new users. And as I do that, I can see that I can assign the Power BI service administrator role here. So this is a role, an administrator role, which is designed to be used by the exact type of person that I just talked about, right? By the Power BI admin. And this admin is going to be able to view the tenant-wide usage metrics here, and also the tenant settings. So this is the list of settings that I talked about before, where you can restrict how users are interacting with Power BI in your organization, for example, by disabling sharing content to external users, disabling publish to web, which I've already done here, et cetera. So Power BI service admin role, something that I think a lot of our customers have been asking for and something that we're excited to have gone out with. The last thing I'll demo is conditional access. So in this scenario, what I want to show first is we have this account, Alice, here. And currently, Alice can sign in with just her username and password. Oh, that's weird. Okay, so with just her username and password, she can sign in just fine. As an admin, I might find that a little scary, right? Especially as Power BI gets deployed more and more and has more and more sensitive data, this might be a little intimidating to me. I might want to say, hey, you know, all users need to do multi-factor authentication before they access Power BI, right? Or I can say something more nuanced, which is, you know, all users that are outside of my corporate network need to use multi-factor auth in order to access Power BI or any other application for that matter. So first I'll sign out, and I'll show you. So I flipped over here to the Azure Management Portal. This is kind of the legacy experience, but it works just as well in the new experience. And so what I can do, just to actually back up a few steps, is in here, so here's the management experience for this tenant, themeasuredproduct.com. I can flip over to applications, and I'll see the list of applications that were configured for this tenant, of which Power BI is one of them, right? So here I click into here, and what I'm saying is I want to configure how users are going to access Microsoft Power BI in my organization, and hit the Configure tab. And what I can do is I can enable these access rules. So I can apply these access rules to either all users or to a specific set of groups. If I select a specific set of groups, I even have the option to kind of have exceptions within those groups that the rules don't apply to. So here, what I've done already, kind of pre-baked, is I've added the sales team. Perhaps the sales team is working with really sensitive data, and I want to control how they access Power BI. Kind of behind the scenes, you're going to have to trust me on this, Alice is a member of the sales team. And then here, you'll see actually a bunch of rules that I can configure, right? So here, this one is require multi-factor authentication. There's also below that require MFA when not at work, which is one of the options I talked about before, or just completely block access when you're not at work, right? So actually, I'm just going to demonstrate the first one here. I'm going to hit save. AD is going to work a little bit here. Oh, I think it's already done. And so now what should happen instantly, by the way, is that when Alice goes back and signs in again, she is going to be asked to do multi-factor authentication. So we'll flip back here and have Alice sign in again. Okay. Whoops. All right, so maybe not instantly, but Let's try that one more time. Say, within minutes. Hey, there we go. Oh, wait, no. I typed the password wrong. There we go. Okay. Thank goodness. So now what Alice has seen sees is, hey, your admin has required you to set up this account for security verification, and so now she is asked to set up MFA, right? But if she had already set this up, she would have immediately gotten that phone call or what have you. So just a very quick, very easy way to actually start configuring these access roles. Okay. So that concludes the governance demos, and actually that concludes the presentation. Some ways to continue your Ignite learning path, right? You can go to Channel 9, go to the Evaluation Center or the Microsoft Virtual Academy. And also, we'd love your feedback. I'd love your feedback. And so if you complete that right away, we'll also give you a chance to win the Drone Pilot Pass. Thank you very much. Thank you.